Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, June 27th, 2002. In the Gwenania Fireside Room this morning, our presenter is Michael Pellet. Today's session number is POM 2002-01, and it is titled Hospitality and Forgiveness. Let's listen in.
All right, then I will cue the tape ministry to begin the tape as we begin to commence to start. And welcome to all of you. My name is Michael Pellet, and I'm one of the members of the Holden Board, so I've just come out of Holden Board meetings and trying to switch hats here for teaching, so we won't have any motions to be passed or anything like that, thankfully. The other things that I do is I teach philosophy and theology at times at the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. And I'm also pastor half-time at a small mission congregation in Saskatoon, King of Glory Lutheran Church. And today, again, I have a few teaching sessions. They're all different topics on different things. And today I want to talk about hospitality and think about hospitality in terms of a notion of forgiveness and think about hospitality in a way perhaps that we often forget. And that is that hospitality does have a sense of forgiveness with it. And that's part of the whole notion of transformation that's involved in the action of hospitality. A little word study on this is to say where does the term hospitality come from? And perhaps many of you know this. It comes from the Latin word hostis, from which we can get a word like host, which hospitality, of course, is to practice being a good host or hostess. But hostis also means enemy. It's the word from which we get things like hostile. So when we're talking about hospitality, we're talking about both the host and the enemy. And that indeed what genuine hospitality would be about is how one takes in or is welcoming to the enemy, to the stranger. And that the action of hospitality is, if you will, the turning of enemy into friend, the turning of stranger into guests. And that's what the practice of hospitality is all about. Another way we see that is in the French word for hospitality, hôtel. That too could be translated as both host or guest. So that in that sense, as you read a sentence and the word hôtel would show up, you always have to try to figure out, are we talking about the host or are we talking about the guest? We see some of those kinds of things to give us an example many times within the biblical tradition and certainly within our own liturgical tradition. Let's talk about this in terms of the Eucharist, where this kind of back and forth between host and guest is always happening. Think about the Lord's Supper. And if it is the Lord's Supper, we're always very clear that Jesus is the host. It is the Lord's table. We are invited to come forward. We are the guests. And yet at the same time, there is that change in that Jesus as the host, and often if you still have communion with the little wafers, the wafer is called what?
The host.
And yet that host is given to us. We receive it, and in some senses, as we are the receivers, as we are the welcomers of that host, the host as well becomes the guest. And so in our worship services, is Jesus the host or is Jesus the guest? Yes. Are you the host or are you the guest? Yes. Are you confused yet? Yes. Good. Good. See? So now we're starting out where we should be, with confusion, right? Because it's the whole sense of hospitality is to have us think through. What is that transformation that happens that turns hosts into guests and guests into hosts? And one of the things I want to look at today is to say that kind of dynamic that happens there is a sense of forgiveness.
Would you use a blue pen?
Would I use a blue pen? I will try to use a blue pen, but
okay.
Yeah,
there were some on the...
Okay, this is a new blue pen.
Oh, good.
I don't think it's any bold.
Oh.
It's any bolder, is it?
No,
it's not.
No.
That
you can't see it at all. Is anybody else having trouble seeing that?
Yes.
Okay.
Blair.
Oh.
Blair. Blair.
There we go. Forgiveness. In green.
Forgiving.
Okay. A few instances, just in terms of biblically speaking, between this switching back and forth between host and guest and how that's understood. I'd like you to turn to Luke chapter 9, please. And it's a story of the sending of the disciples and the feeding of the 5,000. Stories we can find in the other Gospels as well, but I'm going to look here at Luke because, again, Luke likes to talk often about eating and meals. And of course, again, eating, meals, fellowship is one of those times when the whole interaction between guest and host happens. And that one of the things to note is that often at meals, as we read through the Gospels, Jesus is usually, or at least starts out as what? Either guest or host?
Yeah.
Guest. Jesus usually starts out as guest. He's not often the one who puts on the dinner party. He's always invited to the dinner party. But then usually what happens is he ends up being the host. There's that whole transformation that goes on. The key story for that, is the Zacchaeus story. And one of the other folks on the teaching staff, Dieter Westhelle, today, as he talks about church and society, is going to be working specifically with the Zacchaeus story. So I'm not going to steal his thunder. So if you want to find out all about Zacchaeus, you'll have to listen to Vitor. But you can see how it works here in terms of, if you remember, this is in Luke 19, Zacchaeus is the man who is small in stature. And there we're not talking only about his size, physical size, but also he's very small in stature, has very little respect among his own people because he's what?
Tax collector.
Right? The worst kind of IRS guy you could think of. So you know why he's not beloved in his community, right? There's the enemy. There's the stranger, if you will. And then that ironic thing happens as Jesus is walking through Jericho. He stops and literally sees that Zacchaeus is up a tree and says, what? Hey, Zeke, let's do lunch. Let's do it today. Now, there is radical guesting. Jesus invites himself over for dinner. That's being quite the guest, isn't it? Right? Most of us are not that bold in our guesting practices. But there's the guest, and as you know, the rest of the story, Jesus as that guest, turning Zacchaeus into the host, all of a sudden that is turned around, and we see the total transformation in Zacchaeus' life. How that guest and host, how that hospitality and forgiveness dynamic, I think, work together. But let's back up a little bit and look, as I've had you look here now, in Luke chapter 9. First of all, Luke chapter 9, verses 1 through 6. And if someone would read that for us, please.
Then Jesus called the 12 together and gave them power and authority over all demons and to cure diseases. And he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal. He said to them, take nothing for your journey, no staff, no bag, nor bread, nor money, not even an extra tunic. Whatever house you enter, stay there and leave from there. Wherever they do not welcome you, as you are leaving that town, shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them. They departed and went through the villages, bringing the good news and curing diseases everywhere.
Okay. One of the things about this passage, as Jesus sends the disciples out, that I think is truly striking, and we often forget about this, is obviously this is a passage on evangelism, right? I'll kind of agree on that.
Yeah. Right.
And yet, it's not talking at all about how to bring people in. In terms of, we might think, evangelism is often the notion of how are we to be good hosts? How do we invite people into our churches, into our communities? How are we the welcoming, hospitable people of faith? Jesus is sending the 12 out. He's basically giving them instructions on how to be good guests. That it seems here, Jesus' sense of evangelism is much more a notion of guesting, at least initially, of guesting, than it is of hosting. Just think about it. Look through that. Read through that again for yourself and to say, what are the instructions? I'll just act as recording secretary. What are the instructions that Jesus is giving to the 12 here, but in terms of saying, all right, 12, as guests, what's part of being a guest? What does guesting include?
Take nothing,
which is always a great thing for a guest, right? Take nothing.
That's take nothing with you, right? So that
I'm just writing things, whatever you want. If you want to amplify that, go ahead.
I was hearing take nothing with you so that the host, so that you just accept everything from the host.
Okay.
If you're welcome, stay.
Anything else? Any other instructions?
Well, to begin with, go out.
Go out. Yeah. I mean, that's so important, and yet it's so easy to overlook, to say if you want to be a guest, you actually do have to go out, isn't it, right? I mean, if you want to be a true guest as a community of faith, if you want to be a good guest in your community, you actually have to go out instead of just sit there and say, how come nobody's coming? Maybe you need to go out.
Instructed them to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal.
Proclaim. To heal.
And if you're not welcome, just shake the dust off. Just move on.
If not welcome, move on. Anything else?
But you're not only shaking the dust off your feet and moving on, you're doing it as a testimony against them.
Okay. Do you want to tell us what that means?
That would seem to suggest that if someone does not offer the hospitality that you would desire, or receive you in the way that you think, that if you're leaving, then, okay, just go on my way, but no one else is going to go to you either.
By your leaving, you have witnessed, you have shown who they are, or they have exposed, they have shown themselves for who they are.
It's something like in the 30s, the hobos, when they were traveling around throughout the Midwest, there would be hands that they would put in some places into the city. And then some houses where you would be received and where you would not be received. You can still, you know, sometimes find those hands, those marks made in paint.
Mm-hmm. Is dust also metaphorical in this passage that they are to go and proclaim the kingdom of God, which is life, which is growth, and nothing grows from dust. Dust is incapable of growing a seed.
Okay, so we might want to talk about dust as lifeless.
Yeah.
And maybe there even we would want to remember that you are dust, and from dust you shall return.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
What about taking the power and authority?
Who said that?
What about taking the power and authority?
Taking the power and authority. What do you make of that?
He gave it to them over demons and to cure disease, but Jesus gave them the power and authority to take the power and authority.
Okay. And so, but that means, to link it up here again, that the 12 have the same kind of power and authority that Jesus does. Because if we would have read earlier, we would note that this is what Jesus has been doing all along as well. I mean, his whole Galilean ministry is one of being a guest, and now he's saying, you know, there's just not enough of me to go around to visit all those communities and all those homes to be a guest. I need more guests. Mm-hmm. So you 12, start guesting. just like I'm guessing. Right? Yeah. So that means they have the same power and authority. Anything else? Okay. Let's move on a little bit to chapter 10, verses 1 to 12. And again, if someone would be brave enough to read that for all of us. Luke chapter 10, verses 1 to 12.
After this, the Lord appointed 70 others and sent them on ahead of him in pairs to every town and place where he himself intended to go. He said to them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. Go on your way. See, I am sending you out like lambs into the midst of wolves. Carry no purse, no bag, no sandals, and greet no one on the road. Whatever house you enter, first say, 'Peace to this house.' And if anyone is there who shares in peace, your peace will rest on that person. But if not, it will return to you. Remain in the same house, eating and drinking whatever they provide, for the laborer deserves to be paid. Do not move about from house to house. Whenever you enter a town and its people welcome you, eat what is set before you. Cure the sick who are there and say to them, 'The kingdom of God has come near to you.' But whenever you enter a town and they do not welcome you, go out into its streets and say, 'Even the dust of your town that clings to our feet, we wipe off in protest against you. Yet know this, the kingdom of God has come near. I tell you, on that day it will be more tolerable for Sodom than for that town.'"
Okay. So we're building up here, as I see this, in terms of at the beginning of chapter 9, there was so much guessing to do that we had to send out the 12. And as Jesus continues with his ministry, he goes, you know, those aren't enough guests. We need 70 guests. Right? And the whole understanding of the church in Luke, you can talk about that Pentecost experience as the Spirit comes to all, is to say, right, 70 guests aren't enough. We need more guests. Guesting has to happen. And so now that sense is, you can see, I think, as we read through, many of the parallels that what Jesus said to the 12 in chapter 9 about what they should do, all of that's there, but there are some more things added. Right? I mean, if you will, further instructions, further understandings of what it is to be a guest, of how to practice hospitality from the side of being a guest. And so, what would be some more of these additions? Let's take a look at that. And again, just anyone, if you're willing to shout them out, we'll take a look at it. We'll write them down.
Go in pairs.
Okay, this time it's going in pairs. Why would we want to do that, Dorothy?
Unity or strength? Encourage confidence?
Unity, strength, support. It's hard to be a guest, particularly if it's someone's home you've never gone to be. I mean, think about it. Have you ever been invited to a party of someone you don't really know very well? And you feel real comfortable. You feel real comfortable in going, don't you? You know. So you want somebody to go with you. Right? So you talk to your spouse, your partner, your friend, you say, "Oh, I gotta go to this party, I don't really..." You wanna go with me? Right? There's a good sense of also saying, what kind of hospitality do we show to one another? Right? Hospitality and friendship come together there. but right, the pairs, going in pairs for a sense of support. Sometimes it's hard to guess alone. Anything else that you see? Yes,
I think it's interesting the emphasis of the harvest, and that they're, you know, harvesting followers, and that they deserve to be paid for the work that they're doing. And eat, so eat the meal and don't feel like they're giving you something you don't have, I don't know, rights to or deserve or whatever, I don't know. But I just thought that was interesting. I never really read that before and thought of that in terms of
harvesting believers or eat followers. The meal, otherwise known as don't complain about lentil loaf. All right, you can complain about lentil. That's right. Right, but in some, right, in that sense, there's a recognition that one, the laborer or the guest, certainly, if you want to put it this way, deserves hospitality, and yet the kinds of expectations that the guest may bring to that hospitality are kind of called into question. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, in other words, when you come to Holden, whether you pay or not, right, as a guest, you deserve to be fed. But whether it's lentil loaf or prime rib, right, you might have a misplaced expectation there. Especially if you're hoping for prime rib. What else?
It says to issue a greeting of peace to this house.
Yeah. A greeting. And what's so important about that greeting is it says a notion of peace. Right? Again, a comment there. And again, just to put into parenthesis, this is where a sense of forgiveness is going to be at work too, because the dynamics of forgiveness is a dynamics of peace. One of the things that I, from my experience at the little mission congregation that I serve and all of that, in terms of a sense of guesting and that, is that when one works with people who are, if you want to call them, seekers or inquirers or people who haven't had experience in a church community for a while or if ever, they are afraid to come to church. They are afraid to come into our community, maybe just like you're afraid to be a guest in their home. And why are they afraid? Because, properly or improperly, but in terms of perceptions, they never hear a word of peace being spoken by that community. For them, they hear words of threat or fear. If you don't shape up, God's going to get you. If you're not the right kind of person, whether that's in terms of sexual orientation or race or economic status or what, that shows somehow you're not right. And if you're not right, we don't like you. No peace here. Do not enter. And so they are afraid. They are scared. And so that the first thing that we say as guests is to bring the blessing of peace to that person, that home, that community. What a tremendous gift that is for folks who have never heard a word of peace. And particularly, if you will, who have never, in their perceptions, have never heard a word of peace from the Christian community. But only law, threat, fear. And probably the only way they'll hear that word is if you are a guest in their home.
in their place and hear peace. They have a tremendously important understanding of what it is to be guests and how to show hospitality. Anything else?
I am sending you out like lambs in the midst of wolves.
Yep. That makes you feel good, doesn't it? A metaphor here, I think you can see easily again as we play that word play of hostis, the difference between the host and the enemy. Right? At this point, if you will, it's the sense, here are the lambs, here are the wolves. Jesus has no fantasies that this attitude of guesting or that this initial relationship is always going to be nice and rosy and everybody's going to love you and they just can't wait to take you in. But it's a situation filled with threat, with danger. The lamb that you are is not particularly looking forward to having lunch with a pack of wolves. Because if you're having lunch with a pack of wolves, the danger is you might be lunch. Right? That's part of the implications here. Other things that you see with regard to this relationship of hospitality, of being a guest.
Stay there for a while.
Stay there for a while. Why would that be important?
It might take a while for the host to understand what you're doing, or I don't know, to build a relationship or to be able to witness to them. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Building relationships, trust, back to maybe the sense of peace, it takes some time, doesn't it? We're always using, we are what we want now in our particular values are things that we want things to happen immediately. Right? If I can't get results quickly, when that telemarketer calls and they want me to say, yes, I'll buy your whatever, fast. You know, they don't want to say, well, you know, give me 6 months and I'll call you back. Ha, ha, ha. They want results, and we want results. But here, it's a notion of lingering, staying a while. Other things.
After they cure the sick, say, the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God has come near to you.
Yeah. What would that mean? The kingdom of God has come near.
Not taking the credit themselves for what was being done, but to acknowledge that this is authority given.
It links up to the notions of taking power and authority. You're not taking credit for yourself. It's the kingdom of God who has come near. But on the other hand, who is that kingdom of God that has come near?
I am.
The guest. Mm-hmm. We are. If we're the one visiting, we are, if you will, we embody, or in this relationship now of hosting, guesting, of hospitality, is the presence of the kingdom of God. God's reign and rule, God's working
is happening by what you are doing. It's an event. It is this event of guesting. It's happening now.
To fit with your analogy, it seems that it's not just what you're doing, it's also what the host / guest, it's the interaction together. And it's also interesting that the healing comes a little bit later after the lingering and after the initial reception.
Yeah.
Then comes the healing.
Yeah.
Although it says to announce the kingdom of God, whether they've received you or not.
Yeah. Yes.
You still have that.
Yeah, that's the other thing in terms of, you know, you talk about win-lose situations, lose-lose. I mean, in this sense, it's a win-win situation, isn't it? If you want to use that kind of dumb language. In terms of whether they receive you or whether they do not receive you, the results are the same. In both instances, what? The kingdom of God has come near.
Yeah, and in both instances, the outcome sticks. Cure the disease. It's not just visit them while they have the disease. Cure the disease. Tell them that God's rule has come near. And if they accept that, fine. If they don't accept it, you can leave. But the curing of the disease sticks. You don't uncure.
That's right.
The disease. Just, you've done your work, and you've announced the rule of God. That's good.
I mean, and in that sense, to, in there, if you will, a good guest never takes anything back.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, you know, like, well, I didn't like the service at this Holiday Inn, so I guess I'll just take the towels home with me. Right? You know, no, you're not doing that. We're not taking anything. You know, the guest, that presence has always been there, even though now we may leave. Or it hasn't been received.
Please. But it does seem like there has to be a welcoming. In verse 8 it says, whenever you enter a town and its people welcome you, eat what is sent before you, cure the sick who are there, and say to them, the kingdom of God has come near to you. Mm-hmm. So if there isn't the welcoming, then that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, take a look at verse 10 and 11. It's the rejection. You shake the dust off your feet, you move on, you recognize they might be lifeless, but then there's that left, yet know this, right? It's a very kind of emphatic statement. The kingdom of God has come near. In other words, the sense here about part of a guest and the gift that we bring is that God's kingdom, God's reign and rule is not dependent upon whether it is received or rejected. If you will, it's there. And we are the ones who bring it. That's, I think, the key statement, the key notion of that. Anything else you want to say about this sense of guesting and hospitality?
Just when you said that, it's like saying that grace is a fact.
Yes. Sure. I mean, we can. I don't think we're jumping too far out of bounds to recognize that a key understanding of that is that the kingdom of God is understood in terms of God's gracious reign and rule, and that God's grace is there. It is a fact.
Does the word message enter in here? Message and messenger, or is that...
How would you like message and messenger to
well,
enter in?
Well, you see, they're breaking the news.
Yeah?
They're telling that something's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So they're messengers.
They're messengers. We can say that sense of laborer is that they are the messengers. Yeah.
I'm just sort of thinking about the dust and leaving it behind when it hasn't been a situation for you to stay in. and it seems like it's saying, okay, didn't work there, or you weren't welcome there, go on to the next, to not let any of that carry over to yourself, not take on any of the, oh gee, this message isn't being welcomed,
mm-hmm.
and also don't carry it on to the next place and say, oh gee, you're so much nicer than the last place I was. That somehow that you let those people know this wasn't hospitable, shake the dust off, and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of a not keeping score kind of thing.
Yes, yeah, that's mm-hmm. right. There's no sense of keeping it. It's not like go on to the next town and say, boy, you know, Chorazin, you're such a better place than Bethsaida.
Yeah. And I guess also, you don't know that, you know, maybe three weeks forward, those folks go, oh, that's what was going on when those guys were here. So
right.
Just don't make a judgment about it. Just don't expend your energies there. Move to where what you are doing has some effect.
Anything else you want to say about this? You don't want to move? Yeah, please.
Well, let me try this. Take another cut at, I'm sending you out like lambs into the midst of wolves. Isaiah, the lambs will lie down with the lamb. And it is a sign of a peaceable kingdom. So when we announce, when these 70 then and now, when we announce peace, we carry that sure, certain, enduring peace, this great shalom of God, which also is a sign that there are no enemies here. The lion and the lamb are going to lie down with each other here.
Mm-hmm.
This is not so much of a battleground. This is witness time.
Although
I'm not too sure about that.
I like what you say. I think what we're at with Luke here yet, if we want to use that fancy word of eschatology, that already not yet tension, that we know at the end, that vision that Isaiah has of the lion and the lamb together, or in our case, the wolf and the lamb together, that peaceable kingdom will be there. Through our guesting, we will already see glimpses of that peaceable kingdom. In other words, you may go to this community and indeed, as a lamb with those wolves, and those wolves will, through the presence of God's grace, if you will, lie down with the lamb. But you may go to another community, as we find out, and the wolves will have you for lunch.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it's already signs of the peaceable kingdom, but it's not yet complete. There are still wolves out there who eat lambs for lunch, and you might be the main course. Yeah. Let me go to forgiveness here for a little bit. I have some time to work that in. And I want to begin this with a story that is told by Emmanuel Levinas. And Emmanuel Levinas, who died about 2 years ago, is a French philosopher, also a rabbi, a Talmudic scholar. So he combines the study of philosophy with the Jewish tradition and the Talmud and the study. He tells this story for a point where he wants to illustrate both notions of hospitality and forgiveness. And the setting for this story, almost joke, is set on the Day of Atonement. And the Day of Atonement is the holiest day in the Jewish religious year, if you will, in the Jewish religious calendar, because the Day of Atonement marks that key day of forgiveness and the recognition of reconciliation of the people with God. And so think about that day when forgiveness is indeed the theme. And he says this: two Jews, longtime enemies, meet at the synagogue on the Day of Atonement. One says to the other, "I wish for you what you wish for me." The other immediately, "Already, you're starting again." Yeah, that one takes a little while to sink in, right? But think of that. I wish for you what you wish for me. You can see how that's going to already play with hosting and guests. How that already plays for the forgiving. You know, two enemies get together, two people who can't stand each other, and the person says, "I wish for you what you wish for me." Wow, right? Already you're starting again. How do we get along? How do we enable the other to be welcome? How do we show that kind of hospitality? Levinas goes on as he, you know, obviously will now go on for pages and pages and pages and talk about this. I'll talk about just one key thing that he wants to talk about here. And that is, when we talk about hospitality and when we talk about forgiveness, we are talking, Levinas says, we are talking about abandonment, and that to truly practice hospitality, to truly practice forgiveness, we are practicing abandonment. The total giving up of ourselves for the other. And, of course, where Levinas is going to go, and I think you can see this as well, but whether this is the Jewish tradition or the Christian tradition, that truly the only one who can practice abandonment is God. Who else can totally give up oneself for the other? To totally abandon oneself. And to recognize that abandonment happens whether you are guest or host. Let's take it from the side of guesting, since that's what we have been talking about. When you are a guest, what kind of, and we'll even just use Holden, you know, as you come to Holden, and I know some of you are volunteer staff and all those other things, but let's just play the guest game for a moment, if you will. When you are a guest at Holden, what kind of abandonment do you have to practice?
Business.
You have to abandon your business.
Busyness.
Or busyness. Okay.
You're not in charge of anything.
You're not in charge of anything. Maybe I should write this, some of this stuff down too. Huh? We all know this. So that sometimes we have to give up busyness, or let's say we have to give up our own sense of schedule. And almost sometimes like Pavlovian dogs, whenever the bell rings, that's when we begin to salivate. Okay. And we have to give up our own control. We're not in charge of things when we're guests. What else do we have to abandon from the side of a guest?
Give up the bathroom.
Yeah. All right. You have to give up some of your habits, and of course the tougher ones are to try to give up some of your personal habits. Like you can't leave all your underwear strewn throughout the bathrooms or whatever. So yeah, and changing habits is hard, or giving them up for a little bit. What else do you do?
Expectations.
Expectations. You have to give up some expectations. Yeah. Anything else from the guest side?
There may be more things, but I'm just thinking that, you know, you can truly do these things, and sometimes it takes coming to a center like this to abandon whatever remains. If they're there, you're going to cling on to them. But to open yourself, you have to abandon everything before you can be open to receive something new.
Mm-hmm. So, abandoning will lead to an opening. Openness. Anything else from the side of guest? All right, how about from the side of host?
All are welcome.
What do you have to abandon as a host when I'm going to be passing out a sheet so that I want you to put on your name and address so that I'll be able to stop by and see you on my way out from Holden. So when I come visiting, what will you have to abandon?
Sort of our own privacy or private time or own space.
Okay. There's going to be a kind of sense of privacy that you have to give up, and that can be in terms of time or space.
Mm-hmm. Well, lots of times if your guest is an unscheduled guest, I can see the host almost giving up the same things that you give up as a guest.
Okay.
Because if the person comes unannounced, you give up your schedule, your control.
Pick up your underwear out of the bathroom.
That's right.
We'll put all these down. Expectate. And again, just in short, and there's going to be an openness there. But I wanna look at this one a little bit. As host, do you really give up control? Maybe again with an unscheduled guest and you're caught by surprise. But let's say now you've invited some guests over, and you're planning a party. You're planning a dinner party.
You have to be willing to give up some control if you're going to be a good host.
Because
you have to allow for the unexpected, I think.
Okay. Well, all right. So not only expect, but allow for the unexpected.
Which can be good or bad.
So in other words, you've made a wonderful shrimp scampi, only to find out that your guest is allergic to shrimp.
Right.
Now. And the only thing you have besides that in your refrigerator or whatnot is crap dinner. And it's the boss. Or better, it's the pastor. What else? Anything else in terms of the guest or as the host that needs to be abandoned?
Freedom.
Freedom. Whew. How do you abandon your freedom as a host? Say a little bit more about that.
Well, just that you have a schedule you have to keep. As a guest, I don't have to eat or do anything on the list. I'm free to hike all day if I want. You know, I have a lot of freedom. As a host, you have to provide for the guests, which takes a lot of your free time.
Well, you're also... You can't just decide to go out and take a nap because you've got a guest and you're expected to be there and entertain them. So you're giving up the freedom to do any old thing you want to because you have to follow what your guest expects.
Another way of saying you give up self-focus.
Okay, you give up self-focus. This I want to talk about a little bit in terms of an image and link it up with forgiveness again, and an image that that comes about through Augustine and picked up by Luther and all that. One way of depicting sin, Augustine says that what sin means is that we are curvatus in se est. We are curved in upon ourselves. That quick little diagram here. Augustine would say that as human beings, we were created, that we were directed, that our love, our faith is directed toward God. What sin is all about, what Adam and Eve are doing in the garden is saying, no, we're not God directed. We're self-directed. We're curved in on ourselves, and therefore we become self-focused. And that already as hosts or even as guests, you can see that dynamic. Why Levinas would understand it from his, a sense of abandonment. It's this whole situation, this whole condition as human beings that finally we have to give up, isn't it? We have to abandon our self-centeredness if we want to be good hosts and if we want to be good guests. And that indeed, how can we abandon this self? So on our own, this cannot be done. That this abandoning of self-centeredness, of giving that up, is precisely the sense of forgiveness. Because forgiveness, again, one of the words for forgiveness literally means release. The sense of forgiveness, about why it can be called liberation or deliverance. We are released from sin and all that binds us, that holds us up. Here we are released from our self-centeredness. we abandon that kind of self-centeredness. And indeed, as we've seen here, look what happens. An opening. We are opened up. As God forgives us and as we forgive one another, we are opened up to God and to one another. And so that in that sense, the practicing of hospitality is the practicing of forgiveness. It is that transforming, it is that abandoning of who we are, a self-centered, self-focused, you know, controlling, private individuals and what, and opened up for the other. Opened up to say, peace be with this house. Opened up to act graciously toward one another. To recognize that whether we are received or rejected, the fact of God's presence, God's reign and rule, God's grace has come near. And isn't that Jesus' ministry? Jesus' ministry is a ministry of hospitality and forgiveness. Every home, every community at which he is a guest, what happens? There is this opening up. And people recognize the reign and rule of God has come near. And so now Jesus says to the 12, to the 70, to the 423 who are at Holden today, I think that's the number, be a guest. Practice hospitality. Practice forgiveness. Be open. Be transformed. Any other comments or thoughts? Our time is just about gone. It may be gone. And certainly as good guests and hosts, you don't keep anyone over time.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
How do you do that without losing so much sense of yourself and giving so much and that like you run dry? Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, it does. And I think here part of that is two things. You have two metaphors there. The one about losing yourself, and you can think here about some of Jesus' sayings that, you know, what would it gain you to or what advantage is it for you to gain the whole world but lose your soul, right? I mean, you need to lose yourself to find yourself. And I think that's part of this whole notion of abandonment. It talks about that radical sense of death, resurrection, or as we have in the Lutheran understanding of baptism, right? The old self dies and God births and brings to life the new self. So there is a real losing of self there. But the other concern you have there about burnout, that's and part of the answer to that is to recognize that, and it goes back to the notion of why we go out two by two or whatever, is that we are always guests and hosts in a guesting and hosting community. You can never do it alone. You practice hospitality with one another so that you're not burnt out because others are guests and hosts to you, and that brings about renewal and refreshment.
Well, I would think to add to that, just that if you're someplace, you know, and expending as much energy as you have, or if you're there for a while and nothing's happening, they're not welcoming you, then it says to move on. I mean, go to the people that will welcome you, and then in turn you're going to receive back that energy. You know, you're going to be filled up with new needs.
I hope this isn't just rationalization, but I think that sometimes you have to find yourself before you can lose yourself also. I don't think that's just it's not a linear kind of thing, I think. Sometimes you do need to look in. I don't know if you need to, but I think it's part of the process. If you're, it's part of the human process.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. I mean, you know, we have to be careful here that we do not mean by losing yourself to say I'm worms, I'm no good, I'm right. But it's a deeper sense of understanding truly what makes you who you are, and in going at that, who am I? You probably have to lose a lot of the false expectations and understandings you have of yourself. That's the kind of sense that I'm trying to get at here.
And when you give something, you also receive something.
Yes. And that's what I think is the wonderful wordplay with hostess. You're guest and host at the same time. You're a giver and a receiver at the same time. And sometimes it's very hard to keep that all straight. Just as we are forgivers and forgiven ones at the same time. Or as Luther would say, saints and sinners at the same time. And we're totally both at the same time. If that isn't confusing,
I'm reading a book of Desmond Tutu. Says there is no future without forgiveness.
Right.
And it's real profound.
Yeah.
We've got a mission ahead of us.
You do. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Go in peace.